Thank you very much. Just on your note, by the way, Autobahn means highway. Got a bit of an advantage here. Okay, I'd like to bring it back a little bit to, what are we? Who are we doing this for? Who's actually going to use those fabulous networks? What are the applications? And who's going to generate the traffic on these next generation networks? I'd also like to challenge a bit of the thinking that's around, so next generation thinking for next generation networks. And that basically, I'm taking that from the startup world. So I run a small private incubator company called WIPFund, and we've got a portfolio of startups that we help to get their business off the ground. And basically, when I thought about what I was going to talk about today, I thought, really, a lot of the innovation and a lot of the drive that we're seeing on the internet has come from startups. So I think it's actually quite pertinent to look at startups and the parameters that startups are working in now to see what might happen in 3, 5, 7, 10 years' time. So I'm going to work this out here. Okay, so just quickly, startups and NGN, startup investment, because investment sets the parameters often for where startups are going and which ones are going to be the next Google or the next Facebook and which ones will just die. The next generation, traffic generation I was talking about, I'd like to pick out my view on what I think are some key trends and some key domains that we're seeing at the moment. And also, what kind of network will we end up? I believe it'll look very different from what we've got at the moment. Why startups need next generation networks, and why NGNs need startups. And then I'll put forward a few predictions to see. It's always interesting to sort of put a line in the sand and see where we end up. Okay, so why are startups relevant? So we all know a good example in New Zealand that started out in 99 and within 6 or 7 years basically is responsible for over 50% of the network traffic and the usage of the network at the moment. So it's obviously Trademeter I'm talking about. And so if we use the same logic, there are probably a few startups around at the moment that are looking for some killer apps or some usage of data which will end up dominating some of the networks that we're talking about. Startups are very in touch with consumer usage, demand, need. So it was great to hear the earlier speakers about talking about customer-led innovation, and that's exactly the space where startups play and where they need to play. This idea of innovate quickly, release often, all that, it's driven by the users. And the startups are very good at listening to users and finding out what they actually want, and then making that into a service. What you see down there is, over there, is the traffic adoption graphs of Facebook and Twitter. Everything that happens in the startup world for the ones that go well is typically exponential. So you're going from small traffic to extremely through an extremely significant growth to very large traffic volumes very, very quickly. Right, so how do investors shape the future of startups today? And with our current economic climate, we've been given signals from the investment community to sort of get real. And this is about the business drivers of startups. So show revenue streams, produce something that people actually want rather than that is sort of nice to have and play around with. A demonstrated ability to improve the lives of the users, something that will really make a difference to their lives. And having solutions around for actually commercializing what you're doing out there. So it's all very great to have 10, 50 million users, but how are you going to make money out of them? And as we all know, advertising is not always the strongest model and it's very fickle. So investors are looking for ways to capitalize on traffic, on communities, on users, on applications. And we've been given very clear signals that this needs to happen now. And I think this will more than ever apply to the next generation networks. About the domain, so what interests investors these days? Basically anything to do with green, anything to do with crowdsourcing, so, using your users to do some of the work for you. Gaming is still very hot, and of course anything to do with mobile, goes without saying. Also an interesting area of virtual goods, so those of you are familiar with Second Life, I love those property developers who thought, let's start selling land in Second Life. And usually sort of value is created by having resource constraint. In Second Life, of course, you can create as much land as you want. So it's a fantastic business model, I think. So those virtual goods. Now, we talked earlier about what are the key trends. So you look at these fantastic things, it's trend tag clouds that sort of pick up all the keywords that are talked about in blogs and what people are writing about. And there's lots of them around. It's anyone's guess which one will sort of prevail and really be the next Facebook or the next Twitter. I'll venture a few guesses here, and I'll also go beyond what I think is currently making up Web 2. I almost feel like Web 2 is getting a little bit dated. It's been around for 4 years now, 5 years almost, and people talk about Web 3, but that doesn't cut it either. So just the thought, let's go beyond a little bit and see what's happening out there. And just go through a few things. I'll explain what some of them mean. Let's have a look at what's called the Internet of Things. Has anyone heard of the Internet of Things? Great, excellent. So what it refers to is, again, what was mentioned earlier, is sort of bringing real-life objects onto the net and looking at the data that real-life objects produce and bringing that onto the net. An example here is, you can go up to a website called Pachu, and what it does is it basically allows you to tap into sensors that are out at the moment taking temperature measurements or looking at weather, traffic, electricity data, all sorts of things. And I've just pulled up one that looked at the weather in Glasgow. So the interesting thing about this is, so all of these objects and sensors, they produce data streams in standardized formats often, but outside of your traditional network at the moment. So connecting those networks into the internet world and the web world is when it gets really interesting, because as we've heard before, so mashups is still a big topic. And if you can combine some of those data streams to create new applications that deliver real value to people, then you've got an app and you can charge for that. And incidentally, this is not that new, because actually it's been around a while, and using telephone networks for vending machines and lifts to make calls and alerts and report back their status. And moving on to that is a little chip that's been around for a while called RFID and QR codes, which allow the tagging of objects, make it very easy to tag objects and to connect objects into the internet. So if you stretch that out a little bit in terms of what we could do with that, there's a rumor going around that some of the manufacturers of fast movable consumables are actually embedding those chips in their products now. And what they want to do with it is obviously they want to find out, okay, so who's buying our products? And with RFID you can do that very simply, because you can do a proximity sort of search around getting a response from an RFID chip by driving around with the car and just, you know, pointing it at each house and seeing whether you get a response. So then you know whether a particular person has bought a particular product, for example. And then you can overlay that with data around socioeconomics, whatever, and do your marketing and target your marketing campaigns. And again, so this data is now being made available on the internet, and you can tap into it. Tweeting. So how many on Twitter? All right, anyone Twittering just now? Oh, great, there you go. So yeah, a while ago there was obviously this concept of unified messaging. I haven't heard much about it recently. But what interested me about what we're seeing now is that people have actually gone away and have connected up things in their households and to get some data from those things, like the washing machine or the fridge, or in the case of botanicals, plants. And they put a chip in the plant to say, have you got enough water? And then the chip kind of works it out, and when the plant needs some water, it actually sends you a tweet on Twitter. So it says, all right, go home and, water the plant. And so that kind of messaging that's coming through now from the real world into something like Twitter, you can just imagine what you can do with it. You can Twitter anything, basically. And these chips are very cheap, of course, and easy to apply. Track what's going on in your house. And something that was mentioned earlier, Google made an announcement last week about monitoring energy consumption and the use of energy in the house, appliances and all that. And that is, again, a very hot area at the moment. And it's just amazing because there is a massive network out there, obviously the grid, the electricity grid, which at the moment is, there are no easy connections between the electricity grid and the internet. But it's easy to see how, with Google sort of looking at that, that can become a reality very, very quickly, where you get an in-depth view of, so what appliances consume what, and what does that mean for my electricity bill? Am I better off to run the washing machine at 6 o'clock at night, or at 8, or at 10? Should I switch off everything just now because the price of electricity is very high? So the first part of this is understanding how we use applications, appliances in our households, and then using that understanding and the intelligence to then control those appliances. Next step, and that is happening right now, or it's beginning to happen. So you can now buy an iPod fridge. And what it allows you to do is you control the certain parameters of your fridge through your iPod. You can buy that right now. And so see it up there, the little square with the arrow pointing to it, that's actually an iPod plugged into the fridge. And and again, there's a Smart Home have just announced last week that they're now selling an application that allows you to control your home appliances from the web. And again, so this is something that if you take it a bit further, you can get very innovative about it and create lots of applications that help you save money, better use of energy, all that kind of stuff. This is looking back at kind of content are we seeing on the net in the future. And so there's now a number of companies who've perfected the technology of automatic transcription. So basically anything that is being said is automatically recognized by the software that's behind it and is automatically transcribed into, for example, a blog or documents or whatever, and it's really sort of direct publishing from speech. So you no longer have to type stuff. You can basically just sit there and blog away by just having a conversation. And imagine if we do this on a constant basis, what kind of data volumes that would create. And bots. It's an interesting area. There's a startup by a Kiwi entrepreneur a while ago who was trying to find the lost generation for advertisers. And she looked basically into gaming and found out that a lot of this generation of the 12 to 18-year-olds spend most of their time in games and then are not that accessible for a marketing audience. What she implemented with her company Massive, was to have in-game advertising by serving ads dynamically into games. And the way they went about doing this is by analyzing user behavior, analyzing how people play these games, and then serving ads dynamically into the situations where the players are. So for example, if someone has been playing for 2-3 hours, well, maybe they're hungry or thirsty, and then an appropriate ad would show up. And Microsoft thought this was a good idea. And they ended up paying an undisclosed sum, but it's sort of estimated between 200 and 400 million. So again, sort of goes to show what kind of value there is in cracking some of these monetization solutions for certain key audiences. And also, key thing is that this is done by bots. So the intelligent, so the use of bots to process vast amounts of data to create other data, which you can then use to create services. Here's something that I did a couple of years ago. What you're looking at is the actual traffic stats from TradeMe over a year. The big dip is Christmas. And I just created a little bot, you could call it, using a service called Dapper, which basically just went to the website every couple of hours and picked up the number of auctions and the number of people online, which TradeMe generously display on their website. And again, so this is, and the reason I did it actually is we wanted to find out how we were doing with our websites. And if we're having a bad day, I wondered, is TradeMe also having a bad day, or is it just us? And by looking at the graph, we could find out whether TradeMe had a bad day at the same time, given that they represent over 50% of the net traffic in New Zealand. It's all about user patterns and behavior. So the key question, who do I think will be responsible for most of the traffic on next generation networks? And I actually think it'll be bots. So I'm predicting the rise of the bots. And there's an interesting book by Daniel Suarez called Demon, and this is pretty much, a lot of this is taken from sort of his thought experiment of why this is going to happen. And he predicts that bots will be responsible for most of the traffic on the net by 2010, which is pretty close. And we'll see what happens. But I can certainly see why he would argue that. We'll talk a little bit more about bots, but there's certain limitations of even users, even high bandwidth consumption of use of video and anything that you could think of. In general terms, humans don't scale well, and there's only a limited number of them. Whereas robots, you can clone and copy as many times as you want. And also, people are generally time poor, so even if you have all that ability to have these high bandwidth applications, when are people actually going to find the time to interact with them or watch something, you know? And time is limited, so there's only so much time you can spend on it, which obviously very different for bots. They can run 24/7 and consume 24/7 and create 24/7 in terms of data streams. What are bots used for? I mean, you name it. Anything that requires processing of lots of information or monitoring, just anything that you can automate, you can pretty much do as a bot these days. And there are literally hundreds of millions of bots running on the net right now. Many of them in games, many of them just analyzing data, web intelligence, the whole spectrum of what you could think of could be done is probably being done right now in bots. And bots consume and create information, and there's layers of bots, so certain bots have spawned off other bots which do little tasks for them, bring them back, and then they aggregate and all that. So it's an amazingly complex network of little bits of code relying on other little bits of code and then bringing back ultimately an answer for a user. They're highly efficient at doing that. What the graph up there is basically taken from fraud bots, which are trying to increase the number of clicks that websites get on their advertising banners. And a lot of bots are doing this right now. So then you get to the point, it's like, okay, so what if we don't like bots? We want to prevent bots having a lion's share of next generation networks. What can we do? Right now, what is being done by most websites is using a test, are you human? And so this was the first stab at it, and it typically comes out with these, sorry, did you, was it something I said? This are you human question, and you see this when you sign up for almost anything these days, or you've got a, you request something, you have to type in the letters that you see on the screen. And what we have seen now is that there are obviously bots that are able to crack these things. And so it's like we're in this cycle of people who are coming up with the next thing of the test, are you human, and the innovation around that, and then the people who write the bots coming up with how you crack that. And ultimately, most of these guys are very clever and sophisticated. Ultimately, it'll come back to the only sure way you can tell that someone is human is actually by meeting them in the actual world and figuring out that they're human. And my prediction is that will also change when Apple launches the iPerson. Very stylish guy, probably. So. Anyway, I'm not going to be much longer on bots. Yep. So what I'm saying is, I think ultimately there's a huge innovation happening around bots right now, and we'll end up using them in the best case scenario for all of us, and we'll create our own bots simply because we don't have enough time to do the stuff that we need to do ourselves and to find the answers that we're looking for ourselves. And by the way, Amazon launched a service a couple of years ago called the Mechanical Turk, where they've just turned it around, and it's now bots allocating work to humans. So if you're a bit stuck with your income, you can go up on Amazon Mechanical Turk and sign up for it, and a bot will allocate you some work, and you get paid for it as well. So just to wrap this up, I think as humans, we're smarter than the bots and will ultimately stay in control. So this was not about control, this was about who will actually generate traffic on those networks. So what does it mean for startups? What do startups need and want from next generation networks and service providers, players in the industry? We want seamless scaling of system and networks that can follow the typical growth curves of a startup, where you have a low cost entry point, small amounts of traffic, all the way up to 80 million users and the kind of traffic stats that you see from YouTube and all that. It needs to be seamless because you don't have the time for big server moves or switching of providers. Net neutrality has already been talked about, absolute key thing for startups. We don't want to be in a worse position than the big players, so that would be quite important. And increased bandwidth and speed and everything, because we're talking to a generation that is all about instant, all about global, and to a certain extent all about mobile. I believe, taking an earlier point, it is absolutely possible for anyone in New Zealand to start a startup and become the next Google, but I don't think they can host their website out of New Zealand. Case in point, Read Write Web, top 17 blog in the world. And it's Richard McManus, who sits in Lower Hutt, and his website is hosted in the States, simply because most of his readers are in the States, and it's about that speed, which is all important. Why NGNs need startups? Again, I think startups are the drivers of innovation and use of technology. They're very close to users, they're very close to tapping into trends and having their pulse, the finger on the pulse of what's happening, and they innovate extremely quickly because they have to. And they use that through beta sites and release often. What NGN players can do right now and should do is, I think, liaise with startups, talk to investors, set those parameters that investors are interested in, get them excited about NGN, and basically start the conversation now, because we've got a 3 to 5 to 7 year lead time or lag time of a startup now starting with something on NGN and actually it representing a significant portion of the traffic on NGN in 5 years' time. And I'll leave it here. My predictions you can read through. Like I said, I think startups will eventually make and at times also break networks, the next generation networks. So yeah, it was all about how startups are important for next generation networks and what you can do to kind of start the conversation with startups now. Okay.
Okay, well thank you, Stefan. I don't